Connecting our city and South Cambridgeshire. Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling at hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour. Our thanks to Ollie Slack for the football show. I'm Matt Bentman and I am here live in the studio with Alan Alder. Sue Bailey's away this week. Hope you've had a good week, Alan.
Yes, I have. A week of astonishing flavours, including the best chocolates I have ever tasted. And when you hear about the background of the man who made them, perhaps that's not surprising.
My brother had worked as a chef in London and then he'd moved to Paris. He worked for Patrick Roget, who is a very prestigious independent chocolatier in Paris.
The other astonishing flavour I had this week was from a herb, a single leaf I ate at the British Herb Kitchen.
It's different from lemon thyme, which lots of people will be familiar with, because it's lemonade-y. It's almost all like sherbet lemons or something like that.
It is.
It's almost fizzy.
No opportunity for me to do any tasting where I went this week. They're still setting up the new cafe that will become Thrive in Norfolk Street. However, Sue Bailey has been to the Locker in King Street.
Part of the inspiration for opening the cafe, me and my family lived in Australia for several years. And in Australia, the cafe scene is a bit more revolved than the English cafe scene. And you can kind of see the English cafe scene following in the footsteps of the Australian cafe scene.
And we also get some ideas for rhubarb from Nazima Pathan.
One of the things, apart from the usual cinnamon and orange juice, which are great flavours to go with it, is cardamom. Tequila!
Let's begin with chocolates. Just hearing about their flavours is wonderful. This is co-founder of Hill Street, Greg Smith.
Malden salted caramel, a local Wimbish honey ganache, a chocolate that we call Taste Like Home. It's a lovely layered chocolate, Malden salted caramel, praline, foyotine wafer crisp enrobed in dark chocolate, and then has a little decoration of local English saffron. We do a range of sort of marzipan, pure almond paste, and some with ganaches, so perhaps more unusual, a lemon marzipan with a thyme ganache, a ginger and lime marzipan with a green tea ganache, a range of chocolates with a gandujar that we make, a hazelnut and chocolate. The hazelnuts are from Piemonte in Italy, but from, yeah, a lovely family farm that we've been to visit.
Well, those chocolates sound extremely good, and I can report that they taste extremely good too. I tried the Wimblish honey ganache, and it really was astonishing. Each chocolate just seems to have a world of flavour in it. And I also tried a peppermint chocolate, and it just doesn't taste like peppermint chocolates I've ever had before. This was so much better. And they're from Hill Street, which you can find in All Saints Passage in Cambridge or in Hill Street, Saffron Walden. But why do they taste so good? Who's behind them?
My brother had worked as a chef in London and then he'd moved to Paris, where he developed his skills as a pastry chef at Le Douane and Le Scarbia, 2 and 3 Michelin star restaurant. And then he worked for Patrick Roget, who is a very prestigious independent chocolatier in Paris, who runs approximately 11 shops in key locations across Paris. And he is a chocolate artist. My brother had really extended his skills and capabilities, and bringing that back to the heart of Essex and Cambridgeshire is something quite unique. And I'd had a design background, and we were both at points in our life where we wanted to sort of marry things together on Hill Street, where we have a little store with an adjoining chocolate laboratory that you can see the chocolates being made.
These chocolates don't only taste good, they look extremely good too.
A strong influence of Chris's background of some classical French ways of making chocolates, from ganaches and enrobing and classical decoration, but then to some quite modern style, And perhaps some of my influences, how we lay those out, how we select the boxes, how we package the items. And Chris has created a sort of modern range of lovely demospheres with high cocoa butter finished colourings and sort of glossy features about them. But a lot we've sort of kept very classical and quite elegant and simplistic in form and decoration, but in combination together create something we think unique to us.
But the beautiful and at times fresh and vibrant colours are done without the use of any chemical additives.
We'd sort of been led down that route from an early stage where we export some of our chocolates to Japan and they have very specific requirements on certain E numbers and certain ingredients that are not permitted to be imported.
And is that more stringent than Europe?
It is, right. Yes.
So if you are avoiding various E numbers for the Japanese market and you're avoiding E numbers for the European market, then you're avoiding a lot of E numbers.
Absolutely. And I think that's important because we do love to create sort of enticing three-dimensional models for Valentine's, Mother's Day and Easter and Christmas alike, where colour adds that layer of interest or sort of realism to whatever item we might be creating. Our essence is of fresh, natural ingredients, no additives and preservatives, so it's really important to us.
When you think of it, there are lots of times in the year when we give chocolates as a gift, recently Christmas and Valentine's Day, for instance. And at Hill Street, they create new chocolates for each of the special occasions.
We've just completed our preparations for Mother's Day, and we've created some unique models and things for Mother's Day, and we've just this week commenced our Easter preparations, which have begun with do these wonderful praliné eggs in real eggshells. We purchase the eggshells with the tops laser cut off of them, and they're sterilised, provided to us. We fill it with a layer of chocolate, and then pipe a hazelnut and almond praliné that we make, close it off with a little chocolate, and when you then turn them upside down in a little egg box carton, it does look like you're receiving real eggs. And I think a lot of people have a lot of fun with these, but when you crack them and peel back the shells, they're a really wonderful chocolate praliné product. And they're quite unique, a little experience, which everybody likes at Easter time. Yeah.
So when will they be going on sale then, your Easter products?
As we finish the products, we begin to launch them in the store. So those particular products will be finished this week and launch in store next week. We'll continue our production and eventually move into our Easter eggs. We're beginning to, after these ones, beginning to form all the different ganaches and mini eggs and little products for inside our Easter creations. And then we'll commence a sort of series of lovely models as our types of Easter eggs.
And that was Greg from Hill Street Chocolates in All Saints Passage, Cambridge, and Hill Street, Saffron Walden. The Cambridge shop is open Tuesday till Thursday from 10 till 4:30, and on Fridays and Saturdays from 9 until 5. And later in the year, they may well open all week and may also possibly start selling their own gelato in Cambridge, which they already do in Saffron Walden. You can also buy their chocolates online, and as I said at the start of the programme, their chocolates really are exceptional, and it's great to see another really top quality local shop opening in Cambridge.
Certainly is. Well, it's construction time again. CB2 Cafe closed last year. Now, I came to Cambridge, I think it was about a year after its parent cafe, CB1, opened in Mill Road. The world's first internet cafe was its claim. I used to love that place. And likewise, CB2, which holds many strong radio memories for me. Well, this week, I met with a new team who are busy giving the old CB2 Cafe site a makeover. Now, it's early days, but they're keen. They have a vision, and they have a name for the place. It's going to be called Thrive, and this is their beginning.
Pissing up the hammering.
We're sitting here in the dark, in the upstairs of CB2. We're all wearing our coats, crowding around a little electric heater, with the founders.
Karina.
Jez.
James.
Darren.
And Matt. but I'm not part of it.
And there's also Ryan, who unfortunately had to leave an hour ago, so he's part of the team. So there's five of us in the team.
It's the Thrive Five.
Yeah. The Thrive Five.
How long have you been thinking of that?
But we're starting to build a team. What we found already is that people want to help us. Downstairs now, we've got Sophie working, two volunteers earlier.
Yeah.
We've got someone coming tomorrow.
And that's a big thank you to the people in the community who are excited by this project and who have volunteered time and expertise just because they want to see this place open. And that's given us enormous kind of positivity.
We're going to talk about what this place is about to become, in your own words, I suppose.
We have an ethos certainly stemming through the place. So CB2 will change in guise. It will become Thrive Community Cafe and Bistro, and it's very much that community aspect that we want to focus on. So I guess the team want to bring back that community hub, like their second home almost.
We all want somewhere like this to come to, where there's a friendly vibe that's kind of relaxed and informal and full of kindness and good quality coffee and food. That's what we want. So let's create it in a fabulous location.
Yeah. Also, there's so many people who've said they really miss CB2. I think a lot of people are just waiting for the place to open up again. So it's great that we can make that happen.
For the few people who aren't aware of CB2, CB2 is this wonderful location right on the tip of East Road where it crosses over into Burley Street. I suppose you could describe it as, I think of it as like a Quentin Blake illustration. It's two floors ostensibly, split level on both floors, then with a basement, famous for holding its poetry nights, its music evenings.
This is what always happens with poems. Everyone goes deathly silent.
Take this safe. Take this heart and just bounce it all the way downstairs.
Sitting in a dark green chair, head tilted, cigarette in hand.
This buzz bell and fedback feedback fuzz that I'm calling.
Oldest music, pulse and fury.
Without wishing to sound at all clingy, these events are entirely dependent on people actually showing up to them. And genuinely, it's gratitude more than clinginess, really, as I have often had cause to say to people.
Are you going to pick up the mantle?
Yeah, we've already had our license granted for live performances.
Oh.
And we also have a vision of comedy nights, quiz nights, whatever it might be. It's such a versatile establishment that we've got. We can do yoga, which is already here and running, holistic therapies.
Meditation, workshops and talks.
Art classes.
Culture and art is going to be at the heart of what we're creating.
It might be a meeting, it might be a private lunch or dinner, it might be a yoga class.
We'll be creating a thriving business, and people who come along here will help them to thrive.
Yeah.
We'll be plant-based. That's about the world thriving. For example, like a full English breakfast, really, with homemade rosemary sausages, sautéed potatoes, grilled mushroom, baked beans, scrambled tofu, spinach and sourdough toast.
Mm.
Imagine that with a coffee at 8 o'clock in the morning in Cambridge before work.
We're also going to have a children's menu.
Okay.
That's the idea, that's a community cafe, you know, that we welcome everybody, the elderly, the young.
A nice transformation of the area as well, with yourselves and with the people next door. That's Full Circle, who we've covered previously at the Cambridge Market, and they will be doing packaging-free sustainable foods.
And that's one of the things that attracted us to this, is that we're creating a community straight away, because we're friends of Full Circle Shop. We see the synergy between...
Absolutely.
I'm trying to avoid the word synergy, but James always uses it, so... there's definitely... So people will be able to walk between the two businesses in a seamless way.
Yeah, quite so there's an opening between the cafe and the shop down below, and we're going to keep that.
We will try to keep everything as local as possible.
Mm-hmm. No single-use plastics.
Exactly, biodegradable.
Packaging and things, so... I think synergy is a great word, actually.
Yeah.
As Jeremy says, we do know the guys from Full Circle, so it fits in with our values.
And in the refurbishment we're doing, which is a kind of middle way refurb here, we're trying to reuse materials, repurposing, salvaging, foraging to try and reduce our impact.
CB2 was a well-loved cafe.
I've been in Cambridge for nearly 22 years, so I remember CB2 when it was on its glory, having a coffee, enjoying the summer, and I was very sad to see it go. James and I have been talking about opening a cafe, a plant-based cafe. He's not from Cambridge, he lives in Norwich at the moment, so I kept telling him, Cambridge needs a kind of place like that. You have to come to Cambridge. I came across this place and I said, James, we caught the perfect opportunity. We caught Darren and Jez and Ryan as well. Everybody saw the potential and everybody got excited and on board. And here we are.
What does a plant-based cafe mean?
Somewhere which serves food and drink with no animal products. We know plant-based has had extraordinary growth in recent years. It's very much part of all our lifestyles as well. So we want to be in a place providing that for loads of other people. And I think that's going to have a huge amount of intrinsic reward to it.
So it's going to open soon?
We hope and when we are.
Yeah, there's
always a difference.
Yeah, I mean, there's a hope for Good Friday, but we're saying spring.
We're working really hard to get the place ready so that we can welcome hundreds of people every day. Mm. If people want to keep an eye on progress, they go to thrivecambridge.com.
Yeah, and sign up to our mailing list.
James was the first of the Thrive Five that I met.
I've always wanted to open my own place. Like Karina said earlier, this opportunity came along last year and we began negotiations for it, as it seemed ideal for the vision that we had.
It really is calling out for it, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, it is. Yes, fantastic location. I mean, I was a regular customer here at CB2, so I don't have any experience of running a cafe, but I've got enormous experience of going to cafes.
That's important.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Coffee.
Coffee connoisseur. Is that your job title, isn't it?
Yeah, I liked that when you said that.
Yeah. So I know what I like about good cafes. I've been honing my perception of lovely cafes, and so that's part of what's coming into this. We're creating something really beautiful that a lot of people are going to find attractive, friendly, and delicious.
And delicious.
And good coffee.
Good cakes.
Coffee. Yeah, good coffee and cakes.
But
yeah,
cakes.
Essentially the food, and I mean, there'll be a mixture of kind of international dishes as well as, I guess, what you'd call British favourites almost, but they're plant-based. A good menu for breakfast, lunch and dinner. So we're aiming to be open from 8 a.m. till 10 p.m. at night.
CB2 was never open at breakfast, was it, in the old days? So
yeah, so we've got a breakfast menu available to basically catch anyone that obviously wants to have something before they go to work, or just anyone in the morning who wants to come and have a coffee and enjoy a nice, deliciously homemade breakfast.
Planning to have a bar up against the window.
Ground floor, front window.
Ground floor. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. And upstairs we'll have a mixture of tables and relaxed seating to kind of keep it varied.
Somebody want to come and work here, bring the laptop and spend the morning drinking coffee and eating cake.
Yeah, and we'll also have a couple of sofas just for those that want to veg out as such, literally.
Veg out.
And enjoy a relaxed time.
Should we change the name of the place to Veg Out?
Also as well, because we're not a pub and we're thinking of opening until late, it's different because so far here in Cambridge, if you want to meet just for a coffee or just for a soft drink with a friend, you either have to go to a pub or you have to go to a nightclub. And there isn't a relaxing atmosphere that you can actually meet up and have a coffee late at night.
I think that's one of the sort of slots that CB2 used to fill as well. It was that somewhere that was a late night cafe, not necessarily a pub.
If we really go with that idea of this is a place to go in the evenings for not alcohol, although there will be alcohol too, then I'm sure a lot of people will find us.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the beauty of the place, having so many different zones.
Yeah, but also, you know, I took a little inspiration from the Seattle scene.
The Seattle scene. Coffee houses, cafes, roasteries, nirvana.
Paula wants a cracker.
Their nightlife is split in two, really. There's a number of people that go to the bars, but their coffee shops over there open till midnight. And they're there enjoying just a relaxed atmosphere. And I think if that's the aim here, to restore this establishment to that ilk, really, to repeat a community space where people can come and relax with a coffee late at night and just chill. But if anyone's interested
in
supply, then get in touch with us. Send us an email. We're very much interested in microbreweries that might be able to supply us with bottled beer, local fruit and veg companies.
Yeah. We're talking to a couple of bakers at the moment.
Artisan bakers, although we'll be doing a lot of our stuff homemade. Little gaps that need filling from independent suppliers, and we'd love to talk to them.
So what's the email, James, if they need to get in touch?
thrive@thrivecambridge.com.
And the website is?
thrivecambridge.com.
Lovely, and we look forward to it opening.
Come back. Come back and talk to us when we open.
Come back for the opening.
Because we won't be sitting in the dark on that day.
We'll put the heating on as well.
We've got, got nice fairy lights.
Well, here's to Thrive, and we're sure it will.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
And that's the team at Thrive taking over the CB2 cafe site where Norfolk Street meets East Road.
Yes, and roll on springtime for their grand opening.
And here's news of free food available now, Saturday, in Cambridge. You can find this information on the Olio app. And if you're listening to a repeat or to the podcast, check the Olio app for what's currently available. The app is free to download.
Yes, so looking at Olio today, we can see that Nina has some bread to give away. A multigrain seeded loaf. Only opened yesterday, she says. Nina lives opposite the Cambridge Botanic Garden on Hills Road, available for pickup any time this weekend. Here's a big one. At 9 p.m. tonight, there will be a chance to pick up plenty of pret-a-manger food from David. He's one of the Olio food champions, and he's based on Catherine Street, which is just off Mill Road. You'll need to message him what you would like from what's available at 8:15 tonight. He's got categories for you, like meat, seafood, vegetarian, hot food, and sweets or pots. And finally, Caroline has two vacuum-packed bacon, onion, and potato sauté dinners. She's based just above Parker's Peace, and that's a few of the things that are available on Olio right now.
Fantastic. And don't forget the other free app called Too Good To Go, which several food outlets in and around Cambridge use to sell any unsold goods they have shortly before they close at knockdown prices.
Now, last year was the first Love Cambridge Restaurant Week. This year, it's held from the 16th to the 27th of March, and Alan spoke with Christian from Cambridge Bid about it.
The week aims to celebrate Cambridge's vibrant food scene, and hopefully it will inspire and encourage people to try new places they haven't been before and come into the city centre when they wouldn't normally do. And we've got more than 40 great restaurants involved, and all of them have provided offers to the value of £5, £10 or £15.
That's a very large number. They obviously have welcomed this idea.
Everyone's been really supportive and got on board. So, yeah, I think that's a really good number to start off with.
Yeah, but why is Cambridge Bid doing it? What gave you the impetus?
Cambridge Bid is an organisation that represents the interests of over 1,200 businesses in the city. And we deliver projects on behalf of those businesses to ensure Cambridge remains a welcoming and warm place. And we do projects like this to do that, really. And we thought supporting the restaurant sector was something that was missing part of our project. So, we thought we'd give it a go. It's a project that's done in a lot of different cities, and it's always really successful.
It's a great idea because, as you said, it enables people to try out a place they haven't been to before without much capital outlay.
Yeah, so that's the idea.
Yeah. Could you give us a few examples of people who are involved? I know you can't go through all 40 of them, but
taste. We've got a mix of big national restaurants involved as well as local and independent restaurants, and they're all offering things from quick bites to eat to three-course meals. So let me have a look at this list here. Some of the independent ones we've got Fitzbillies, which I'm excited about. We've got a few of the Market Square stalls involved as well, who are providing some £5 lunch offers as well. So if you're on your dinner hour next week, you can go.
Yeah, I know. I saw Mac Daddy's on the list actually.
Yeah,
that's quite a big favourite.
Bridges. There's over 40, so I won't go through them all. But if you go on our website, which is cambridgebid.co.uk/restaurantweek, there's a whole list of all the restaurants there. And all you need to do is find the restaurant you're interested in. It displays the offer, and then you can download a voucher. And as long as you present that to the restaurant you're going to, that's how you redeem it anyway.
Yeah, a great idea, and good to see it return. Now, here's a few more of the participants. There's La Piazza by Signorelli's in the Grafton Centre and Signorelli's in Burley Street. Also in the Grafton, Chi Restaurants, the Courtyard Cafe in the Fitzwilliam Museum, Agora at the Copper Kettle in King's Parade, Kim's Bulgogi, the Korean Barbecue and Chicken Takeaway in Regent Street, the Duck Truck in the Grafton, Nana Mexico in Petit Curie, Regent Street and Fitzroy Street, Novi in Regent Street, Steak and Honour in Wheeler Street, Parker's Tavern, Cafe Abantu, and Amelie Flancouche in the Grafton, and plenty more. All of these can be found on the Cambridge Bid website.
On Wednesday, I visited the British Herb Kitchen, which is based just outside Cambridge. And there, I met Victoria McNeil and some very interesting herbs. Well, we're outdoors, Victoria, looking at some herbs here on the table, and I'm pleased to say I do recognise some of them. I can see there's some rosemary. This is rosemary, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah, well spotted.
Thanks. And this, to me, looks like thyme, but it doesn't look like the sort of thyme I've got in my garden, actually.
There are so many different types of thyme, and we tend just to see one or two in our shops and supermarkets. This one, Alan, actually, if you had a taste of it, you'll see why it's called lemonade thyme. It tastes just like sort of old-fashioned lemonade. Gosh. Like fizzy lemonade. It's extraordinary.
Can I pluck a leaf
yep.
off? Yeah,
help
missed.
Yourself, if you don't mind. I spend my life going around chewing bits of leaf off, so as long as you don't mind. Mm.
This one's very familiar. Is that sage?
That's a sage, yes. Yeah, that's a sage. Mm. I mean, this is a very funny time of year, the end of February, to be showing you herbs, because it's probably about the worst time.
Right.
Nothing's yet quite come through, right. And this is. So I've really got some of the more common, easier to grow herbs that'll probably be a bit more familiar to people. With the possible exception here of hyssop, this is a blue hyssop, which is a lovely aromatic herb, grows wonderfully in this country, has done for hundreds, if not thousands of years, has beautiful flowers which attract the bees and butterflies. And then another one.
By the way, that thyme, which I've now tasted, is fantastic.
It's amazing,
it's
isn't
so lemony.
it's different from lemon thyme, which lots of people will be familiar with, because it is sort of lemonade-y. It's almost all like sherbet lemons or something like
is,
that. It's almost fizzy.
Yes, it is. That's
which is great.
Exactly what it's like.
The other one that people are less familiar with, I think, is sorrel, which is a wonderful herb. And I've got a couple of types of sorrel which have come through the winter. There's a red-veined sorrel, which looks pretty but isn't as delicious as the broadleaf sorrel or indeed the buckler leaf sorrel. We use the sorrel in a pesto because it has a lovely lemony flavour. It's been around for thousands of years, because we know the Roman soldiers, when they were building Hadrian's Wall, used to eat it as the thirst quencher. Because it's very, if you know it, if you bite the leaf, it's very, very sharp, very citrusy, and it was probably a lot safer than the water.
Yes. And what's this yellow flowered one? This is totally unfamiliar.
So this is another thyme. This is another lovely thyme. It's called Archer's Gold, and it just looks lovely to see a bit of goldy colour at this time of year, isn't it? It's quite unusual. Otherwise, everything. So I have an Archer's thyme here and another older one, which is a Foxley thyme, which has these little pinky leaves to it. The other one I think I've got out here, we've got some fennel here. Fennel grows, again, very well. It spreads a bit like wildfire, so you have to keep an eye on it, but it's got a lovely flavour, whether you use it in salads or in dishes or with fish or a number of things. We make a fennel and sea salt fudge, which is quite
slightly
unusual.
Aniseed-y
flavour. It's slightly aniseed-y, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And quite a lot of our herbs are slightly on the aniseed-y. Quite a lot of the ones that have grown in this country lean towards that aniseed-y flavour. So chervil, dill, fennel, quite a few of them.
And this one?
Those are garlic chives. They look a bit like chives, except that...
Oh, but so garlic chives are different from
chives. They're
different,
yeah. So sort of chives, onion chives, are oniony. And garlic chives, not surprisingly, are garlicky. The difference, you can tell the difference, because this has a flat leaf, whereas you'll know if you buy or you grow chives that it has more of a sort of tubular leaf. And they are fantastic flavour bringers, and they'll grow, again, really easily, grow really well in our climate and in our soil, which is part of what British Herb Kitchen is all about.
Right. Okay, shall we go inside and you can tell me about herbs that you're...
Before we freeze to death.
You haven't got on a show.
Yeah, absolutely. After you.
Of those outside, you know, I'm vaguely familiar with things like, well, obviously chives, though not garlic chives, but hyssop. I don't know what hyssop is.
Hyssop is a really nice aromatic herb. So if you were going to use something in the sort of thyme, oregano, rosemary, so quite an aromatic flavour in your cooking in some way, hyssop will do that job for you. Slightly milder, partly because of our climate, but still with a really nice aromatic flavour. I use it in a British Herb Kitchen, a dried herb mix. It brings a lot of flavour to that. I also have a number of recipes on the website with hyssop in. The most common one is a blue hyssop,
has beautiful blue flowers, which the bees and butterflies love, but you can also get it in a pink and a white. You can make a little hedge with it. You can do all sorts of things because it's semi-evergreen, so it still goes through the winter. It doesn't flower during the winter, but it still looks good, and it clumps up into quite a nice little bush form. So, right.
So when you go into a supermarket and look at the herbs there, you see rosemary, you see thyme, don't you? But you don't see the variety that we've seen already, and there are others, no doubt, that you can tell me about. And is that what British Herb Kitchen is about? Are you promoting lesser-known herbs?
Absolutely. I mean, that was part of the driver for this, was that, I mean, I spent a lot of years overseas in places with wonderful culinary heritage, and all over. I lived in Italy, I lived in Japan, I lived in all sorts of places, all over the place. They would use all of their herbs that grew in those countries, that would grow in their climate and in their soils particularly well. And we just didn't do that, it struck me. So often when you go to the supermarket, you'll see the standard kind of basil, coriander, lemongrass. You know, there are six or seven herbs that you find almost everywhere. Because we've got much more interest now in a plant-based diet and people want more flavour and different flavour, let's stop looking at the same six or seven. Let's expand our repertoire and let's eat things which we can grow ourselves, which don't need any intervention. So wherever you get them from, it can be fairly minimal farm to fork. You know, all of those sort of things seem to come together to point me towards looking into the variety of British herbs.
And you've got a website in which you have got photographs of quite a lot of herbs, and you also have recipes, and you also have a reference to something called Herbalate.
Oh, yes, yes.
What is it?
Well, that was a wonderful discovery. It's really a form of sort of omelette or frittata, which comes from the first known recipe book to be written down, which was called The Form of Curie, which I think was commissioned by Richard II. A very, very, very old recipe book. And this is effectively an omelette using about 17 or 18 different herbs. Now, these would have just been herbs that were gathered locally. It's got lots of things in that we probably are not so keen on now. Lots of quite bitter. It's got some herbs which are quite bitter. I'd quite like to bring back bitter, but at the moment people aren't wild about that. So it's got some tansy and rue and things like that. But I make it with a selection of British herbs which, you know, are much more appealing in flavour. But it's just so easy to do, and it just showed me immediately that we have had this culinary heritage in herbs that has just somewhere slipped off the radar.
What other herbs might I be missing out on there, since I only know the common ones?
Well, one of my favourites, I mean, we've talked a little bit about hyssop and sorrel. One of my other favourites is lovage. Very, very unsung, but with wonderful flavour. If celery and cardamom got together and produced a new plant, it would be the flavour of lovage. So it has those sort of celery notes, but also a sort of spicy undertones. Now, lovage goes with all sorts of things, and they use it in lots of... It's not only that it's only grown in Britain and in the UK, but it's grown here, again, it's grown here for thousands of years. We know that the pilgrims, going on their pilgrimages back in the Middle Ages, used to put lovage in their shoes as a sort of primitive odour eater. It had those kind of, it has sort of antiseptic or disinfectant deodorising properties. It's also apparently an aphrodisiac, but it's flavour wise, it's really good, and I think it goes very well with tomatoes. So we make a tomato and lovage passata. We also make some little lovage roasted tomatoes, like cocktail tomatoes, that you can just nibble at as a kind of antipasto. You can make, I've just created a new lovage and cashew pesto, which I think tastes delicious, but we haven't yet done all the testing of it and so on, but that should be coming quite soon.
As you say, it was popular, very popular. It grows here, it has grown here for thousands of years. So what led to its downfall?
I mean, my theory And it's probably no more than that. I mean, we had a huge industrial revolution, mass emigration of people to the cities, and therefore losing a lot of our sort of country traditions. I think that, coupled with world wars and rationing and various things, growing things slipped off in that way for flavour, just somehow slipped off the radar. And I think by the time we got interested in cooking again, it was probably Elizabeth David bringing over Mediterranean herbs and the Mediterranean flavours, probably in the 50s and then the early 60s. And so I think people thought, oh, great, you know, we've now got oregano and we've got basil and we've got... I think we forgot to sort of reinstate the herbs that we grew so well.
Well, judging by what I've tasted today, we're really missing out.
Yeah, good. That's good news. These are, when I say British Herb Kitchen and British Herbs, I'm not necessarily talking about native herbs.
No, but they'll survive.
But I'm talking ones that possibly came over the Romans, as many of them mm-hmm. did. But it may have come at some stage from somewhere else, but which grow, which we know. So my criteria are, have they grown here for hundreds, thousands of years? Do they taste good? And if I can basically demonstrate those two things, then I will try and include them in part of the range of products.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, tell me about your products then. What sort of products have you got, and how can people buy them?
Yeah, what I try and do is use the fresh herbs that grow here in a series of very easy to use products which preserve the flavour of those herbs, so that I can introduce to people what those herbs taste like. So, for example, I have a range of products which I call paints. I have a wild garlic and walnut paint. I have a dill, anchovy and chilli paint. I have a chervil and mint paint. The idea with those is that they just use fresh herbs, cold-pressed rapeseed oil, very little else, and paint them onto a little bit of veg or fish or meat, depending on your preferences, and put them in a hot oven, and you've immediately got lots of herby flavour without any effort at all, really. So the idea is to make them very easy to use, but still very fresh. So what's in them is a lot of fresh... The majority of the product is based around fresh herbs. I then do a series of baked goods, if you like, lemon verbena shortbread, fennel and sea salt fudge, bay-infused cheese and chive scones. I do various things which I take to... Some of which are sold commercially, but which I take to shows and events and things like that, so because they're things that are easy for people to consume, really. And I'm expanding the range as I go. We've now got 7 or 8 jarred products available, and there's a shop on the website, so you can obtain the products directly from British Herb Kitchen, from us. But I'm also being stocked in some rather nice places now. So if you go to the GOG, I'm there, but I'm also now in Kew Gardens and in Waitrose Farm Shop, which is down in Hampshire, and with sort of a few small farm shops and delis around the country. And I'm hoping to go in that direction, to broadly stick with the independents, if you like.
And your website has got a lot of information on it, and some really very nice looking recipes. And these are recipes that, what, you've come across or you've devised yourself?
They're recipes that I've created. I mean, you always get inspiration from somewhere, but what I'm trying to do is to showcase the British herbs. So my, if you like, my mission is twofold. One, obviously, I want to have success with my products and the sale of my products, but the other side of it really is to say to people, listen, there are lots of interesting herbs out there. If you're following a vegan or a vegetarian diet and you want to find more flavors, don't worry, they're here, and you don't have to get herbs that have come from Morocco or Spain or southern Italy or wherever it happens to be.
And do you sell the herbs themselves? Do you sell the plants?
I don't, at the moment, sell the plants online, in the online shop, because I don't produce a sufficient quantity But I work with some good plant growers, and I can give people, you know, good pointers as to where to go to. I do, when I go to shows and events, Eat Cambridge or Burley or wherever it happens to be, I sell plants as well.
And your website presumably is, you just put in British Herb Kitchen into a search engine and that's it.
Yes, it's www.britishherbkitchen.co.uk. You can look at recipes, you can read a little bit about the herbs and their history, and you can buy things. Yeah.
Right, lovely. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And that was Victoria McNeil from the British Herb Kitchen. I thought it was all deeply inspiring. If you go on the website, you can see the recipes, the products, and also sign up to a newsletter.
And there's the music signalling time for the latest food tweets from the city.
Yes, well, there haven't been a huge number of tweets this morning. There's been Bushel Box Farm Shop in Willingham. In their cafe today, amongst the various cakes they're selling, is a marmalade cake, almond macaroons.
Mm.
I had a really good almond macaroon from Fitzbillies during the week, actually. Very nice things. Spiced coffee apple tray bake. Calverley's Brewery is open as usual. Beers all day and pizza Mondo from 12 till 3 and 6 till 9. And Darwin Nurseries have also tweeted. They have the Wild Juniper Dairy there today for their monthly pop-up. They're selling Norfolk and Suffolk cheeses.
Very good. And don't forget, you can keep up with what we are tweeting by following us at Flavour105.
Now, this is the time of year when I start to get very excited about the return of rhubarb. There's lots on the market at the moment, and it's forced rhubarb this time of the year. And although many food writers prefer it to the naturally grown form, I think it hasn't got as much flavour. So I've been digging about in the flavour archives on the Cambridge 105 radio website and found this piece from Nazima Pathan on the best ways to use forced rhubarb.
A great thing to use both in savoury and sweet dishes, great accompaniment to game meat such as duck. If you were to make a compote with it, if it was me, I would probably spice it with some star anise and other winter type of spices and then serve it alongside some duck breast, maybe with a red wine reduction. In terms of sweet, obviously, preserving it is a good idea, and both curd or preserves, it'll be a really good way to keep that pink colour. We also like poaching it. Now, one of the things about cooking with forced rhubarb is that when you cook it, sometimes it will lose its colour a bit. So a good way to do it is either to bake it or to poach it in a sous vide type equipment. So if you've got some vacuum bags or some bags and then poach it in water, you don't need a sous vide machine really. You could put it in a slow cooker, but if you can put it inside a bag and a sealed bag with and get the air out and then cook it low and slow with the syrup inside, it will retain that bright pink colour. And that's something we did at a supper club a while back where we did some mi-feuille with a rhubarb and a cardamom cream. We actually had cooked the rhubarb in that way so that it remained a very bright pink.
And did it retain its shape, or is that
yes,
a matter
yes, so by
for...
doing it that way, it will retain, because otherwise, obviously, it can get mushy.
Yes.
So you have to be very careful. And so a great way, if you want to keep that nice shape, is to poach it till it's just right. And then if you wanted to put it in a tart, for example, then lay them gently onto the pastry base and bake it. But I think cooking it in a pouch sous vide, or in a slow cooker, in a water bath, essentially, is a great way to keep the colour. As long as you can just keep it simmering, for example. But as long as you've got a bag that you can put it in any food grade bag.
And you can cook rhubarb without actually adding any liquid to it, can't
yes,
you?
Yes, yeah, so it will break down quite easily, and so it makes for a great compote. And one of the things, apart from the usual cinnamon and orange juice, which are great flavours to go with it, is cardamom goes very nicely. And we've done a compote with cardamom and sugar in for rhubarb, which we served with a jasmine rice panna cotta, where we cooked the rice in milk and then used that milk, discarded the rice, and used the milk to make a panna cotta. So it had a very nice, delicate flavour to go with the
sort of sour but slightly warm cardamom flavour of the compote. Nigella Lawson has a great one that I've also done as well, which is to put it instead of a lemon curd tart to make a rhubarb curd tart, and that's delicious. I think the sort of tartness of the rhubarb with this very sweet meringue, but light meringue, is really nice, and it's a lovely flavour.
But it is important, isn't it, to retain the tartness, because without it, it's losing one of its essential characteristics.
Yeah, I think that's
really.
Right. I think it's a great flavour, and you definitely want that to be there.
Mm. Bushelbox Farm has just tweeted to say that they've got rhubarb in stock at the moment, and their customers are using it to make crumble, very nice, gin, lovely, and jam, marvellous.
Then thanks to Nazima Pathan also for those ideas on rhubarb. So now let's take a trip down King Street, home of Darry's, Stem and Glory, Thirsty and Hungry, and The Locker. Now, we covered The Locker, I think it was back in 2017, but Sue Bailey has been back to find out how they've been evolving and also what life is like in King Street. She spoke with Adam Hodges while the cafe was in full flow.
How do you feel as being part of the King Street community? It's slightly out of the main area, but it's not.
No, well, it's a bit of both, certainly. So we've got huge amounts of student accommodation within a stone's throw, and then it is a bit of a cut through to get to town, but we are removed enough that it's more the quieter community cafe, I'd like to say. We don't get the huge throngs of tourists come summer. We certainly get some, but I wouldn't say it's the driving force. I've worked in a cafe in the centre of Cambridge in the past, and that was very busy, but with a different clientele. So I think it's a lovely location, you know. The other businesses on the street are super nice, and it's a nice little community, and we get huge amounts of the students, which is lovely, and we also get loads of locals, and the occasional tourist stumbles down King Street as well. So it's a fantastic location, and we couldn't be more thankful for it. You know, opening a business is a learning experience, so we decided to just start with one thing, which was the coffee, and do kind of simple foods like sandwiches and toasties and sausage rolls, and kind of progress from there. So I'd say that our focus is excellent quality across the board. So our coffee we get from a local roasters, Hot Numbers, who they've been really great to us. And then we do what a very popular brunch menu, using as many local suppliers and ingredients as we can. You know, we get our bread from the market, the Earth's Crust, which is just fantastic. And then we get bacon from the Mill Road Butchers, and avocados from around here. Well, not from grown around here, but from local suppliers. So yeah, we like to think that we offer a great range across the board of food and drinks. Again, we get all of our cakes and slices from around here. So we get Portuguese tarts from the Norfolk Street Bakery, who run by a Portuguese woman, and then our round cakes and our tray bakes we get from Cambridge Bakers as well, you know, so they're all fantastic, even if I say so myself. Part of the inspiration for opening the cafe, me and my family lived in Australia for several years, and in Australia the cafe scene is a bit more revolved than the English cafe scene, and you can kind of see the English cafe scene following in the footsteps of the Australian cafe scene. You know, we were behind the times in having like flat whites and very kind of specialty smaller roasters, and the food is the same manner, you know, smashed avocado on toast and things of that nature are massively popular over there, and you're seeing that slowly bleed through into English cafe culture as well.
What about the traditional English, or elements of the traditional English
breakfast? The full English breakfast. Yes. Well, that's certainly still popular, and we do have people asking for that. We are unfortunately have quite a small kitchen, so we had to think long and hard about the best way to utilize that space. So we've certainly got some aspects of it. We got bacon and eggs on toast and things like that, but the logistics of doing baked beans in the full English breakfast with things seemed a little bit too tricky, but we can do a kind of mix and match, so you can have your mushrooms and your bacon and your poached eggs on toast. So we've got the fundamentals almost of the Fungal English breakfast, but with some more variation as well.
What do you see as the upcoming trend?
I presume it's going to be a continuation of what we currently have. You know, people are presumably, a large part of it is the environmental consequence of food and diet. So we see the vegan options becoming more and more popular. We provide Oatly as our non-dairy alternative for milk, which we find works a lot better in steamed milk for coffees. So that has been selling more and more as months go on, so we expect to see a continuation of that trend. We do a fantastic vegan brunch special, so all of those things I presume will be big hits in 2020 and beyond.
And any plans for further expansion?
It's been talked about, and it's something that would certainly be a lot of fun and I'd enjoy to do, but have to think long and hard about the right location and the right time to do it. So it's on my horizons, but I'm not in any hurry to expand as of yet. If the opportunity presented itself, then I'd certainly take it up. But
you certainly seem busy enough. You're absolutely heaving, which is pretty good going.
Yeah, well, it keeps me busy, certainly.
Yeah, it's a good place, the Locker. I pop in from time to time, and it has become noticeably busier, which is a good sign.
And here's another good sign. That was Green Onions, signalling the start of our new section. And we begin, as usual, with jobs.
Yes, we do. The Indigo Cafe in St. Edward's Passage. It always strikes me as rather amusing, that road name. We won't go into it. Anyway, they're looking for someone with previous experience of espresso machine use and or food preparation. But you must be able to work one day at the weekend and one day during the week. There are application forms available at the counter.
Cambridge Wine Merchants has full and part-time vacancies in their wine bars at the University Centre and in Bridge Street. So if you'd like to apply, you can email your CV to gareth.cambridgewine@gmail.com.
A chef de partie is needed at the Shelford Deli, and if you go onto their website, you'll find full details.
The chef de partie is also in need at Darwin College. Closing date for that is the 20th of March at 5 p.m. Pay is £22,500 per year, and full details and an application form are available on the Darwin College website.
STEM and Glory in King Street need a chef or a chef de partie, £9 to £9.50 an hour. Pop in for details.
And Sam Carter at Restaurant 22 in Chesterton Road is looking for a strong chef de partie, sous or pastry chef. Really good salary, 4 days a week and tips. Email alex@restaurant22.co.uk.
Yeah, good luck if you're applying for one of those jobs, and please let them know you heard about it here on Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yeah, and if you're looking for staff and you'd like to advertise in this slot, please email sales@cambridge105.co.uk.
And on to other news. On the 15th of March at Meadows in Eltersley Avenue, there's a pop-up brunch brought to you by The Modern Table. There are fresh pastries and three courses, along with unlimited tea and coffee and a treat to take home. Tickets from Eventbrite.
And a little bit more news now. We mentioned earlier in the programme that Thrive is a new plant-based cafe. Well, Coleridge Community College is holding a plant-based Indian cookery course. It's called Beyond Curry. Now, this is a 4-week course where you can cook with vegetables, grains, seeds, legumes and fruit to master Indian cooking techniques. It begins on April the 30th and it runs through to May the 21st. And if you like the sound of this course, you can book a place via their website, adultlearning.education. And then in the search field, type in Beyond Curry.
Right, and the next item is at the British Library in Euston Road in London. And I know that's not in Cambridge, but, you know, people do go to it. So, and Matt, this is a huge list, so you'll have to tell me when to shut up.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll break into the news. Right, these talks, the tickets go on sale on the 4th of March. And I can't read all of them, but there's Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall on a talk, You, Food and the Planet. There's Tom Kerridge in conversation. There's Ken Holmes' Stir-Fried Life. He will be talking to Fuchsia Dunlop.
B. Wilson is on the 24th of April, Feeding Our Children. On the 28th of April, On Restaurants, Asma Khan in conversation with Tim Anderson. Dr. Annie Gray with Laura Shapiro and Sue Quinn is talking about home cooking, past and present, on the 30th of April. Honey & Co. on the 14th of May, Food from the Middle East with Tastings. And Matt's telling me to shut up. I'm not going to. Oh, all right. One more. 30th of May, The Science of Food with Harold McGee, the famous. Fantastic. And that's it from the British Library. Sorry, Mum.
And that really is all the time we have for today. We are here on alternate Saturdays at 1, repeated Sundays at 2, and podcast early in the next week.
Right. My turn to talk again. Coming up on Cambridge 105 Radio, today at 2 o'clock, women making waves, including this thing called the Saito sponge. I'm not sure. I haven't had lunch, so I don't want to hear about the Saito sponge. 3 o'clock, The Gadget Guide. 4 o'clock, What You Might Have Missed. 5 o'clock, The Cambridge Football Show, The Results. 6, Chris Brown's Soul and Dance. 8, The Century of Sound. And at 9, Paul Cristoforou with former record shop owner and band manager Lee Wood, and from 11 till 1, Club Beats.
And maybe after 1, St. Edward's Passage in the Saito Sponge.
Don't go there.
And that's all from us. Flavour will be back on the 14th of March. So until then,
goodbye.
Goodbye.